Going to kick things off by welcoming to the program Senator Curtis King from the 14th District, Yakima. Good afternoon to you, Senator. Good to have you on the program again.
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Always, sir, always. So let's start off talking about a couple of the bills that you have sponsored for this year's session, just in time, of course, for Sunday being Super Bowl 57. Another attempt at expanding sports wagering in the state of Washington to card rooms and racetracks outside of just tribal casinos. We know this was attempted, I believe, last year as well and didn't go through. Senator Perry Dozier from the 16th also on this bill with you. Why bring this back now, and do you think it has a better opportunity to get through committee and get to a floor vote?
Well, yeah, we brought it back because I think it's the fair and equitable thing to do. Obviously, a couple of years ago, we took a vote, and not all of us voted. Most all of us on the Republican side, I think, voted no. But they gave the authority for sports betting to the tribal casinos, 100%. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's equitable. We have 44 card rooms in this state, privately owned. Most of them are owned by a company named Maverick. He's invested millions of dollars into these card rooms. They are run by employees that are union, that have great benefits. They are involved in their community. All the things that we would ask of a business, and yet we won't give them enough. We won't give them this part of the gambling in the state of Washington because we've given it all to the tribes, and I think that needs to be reversed. We need to support these card rooms. They provide great benefits to their employees, which are the employees that live all around in our communities. That's why we dropped the bill. I can tell you it won't go anywhere. But we're going to keep dropping it until we get the result that we want.
So. Senator, I need to ask you this question as a follow-up. We've got a low-carbon fuel standard. We're selling credits, which is going to raise gas prices. We are raising taxes. There are bills to raise taxes on cannabis. There's bill to try and get a capital gains tax. Every time we turn around, the estate tax. There's so many other taxes, and I know we're going to see more of them coming this session.
Yes, you will.
Tax, 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 tax. But what we do is we make no tax revenue from the tribal casinos, so we give them sports betting, and we get no tax revenue off of it. Why do we continue to do this? Why does this continue to be done as a state where we know that the tax revenue on card rooms and anything that's a casino is a higher tax? It's in a sin tax bracket. So why do we continue to allow the tribes and give the tribes all of this non-taxed revenue?
I wish I had an answer for you. It makes, to your point, we just keep raising taxes on the citizens of the state of Washington, and yet we have an opportunity to be fair with the tribes. I would tell you that if we were able to pass the bill that we dropped to allow these card rooms, the tribes are still going to get 80% of the business.
Yep.
I mean, there's no doubt, at least 80% of the business. We're just trying to be fair to not only these card rooms who, as you say, they pay higher taxes than anybody. They take good care of their employees. They provide the benefits. We don't know what the tribal casinos do. We don't have any control of that. They don't have to do the things that these card rooms have to do. They don't have to meet those requirements of unemployment and all those things. I don't know whether the tribes do or not, but it makes no sense that we just keep raising taxes on the citizens of the state of Washington when we could, you know, just by simply giving these card rooms the opportunity to participate in sports wagering, it would bring $50, $60, $70 million into the state coffers. We ought to do that.
Well, and Senator, the other end of it, too, is you mentioned there's 44 card rooms around the state. That's a significant amount of tax revenue. There's only so long a business can go being leveraged and having a competitive disadvantage before it goes away, and with it goes that tax revenue.
You're exactly right. And another reason why we need to support these people, because, you know, as you point out, the only advantage they have now is that they're located in places that might be some distance from a casino, a tribal casino. That's the only thing that's saving them, and most of these are just barely hanging on. And as you say, we collect whatever revenue they generate, we collect as a state millions of dollars in taxes off the card rooms. We get absolutely nothing from the tribal casinos.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th District in Yakima here on The Bottom Line. Senator, I want to shift gears. I'm not a fan of rolling brownouts or rolling blackouts. We don't have enough charging stations in the state of Washington to come anywhere close to supporting electric vehicle goals that the governor wants and those in the majority party want. So I'd like to seeing Senate Bill 5091 that you're sponsoring that expands tax incentives to research hydrogen fuel cells in Washington State. Talk about this one for us, please.
Well, the idea here is I firmly believe that hydrogen is a better answer than electric. And the reason being is electric cars have to be charged, and that can take anywhere from 20 minutes to 3 or 4 hours to 8 or 10 if you charge them slowly overnight. You go on a 600-mile trip, you probably have to stop at least once or twice to charge your car, and you don't know whether that's going to take you 15 minutes or 3 hours or longer, depending on what the queue is in front of the charging station. We don't have enough charging stations, but we just keep every week we find out another problem that will occur with all electric cars. The purpose of the bill that we dropped is to put more money into research. We have professors and students over at WSU that have been working on hydrogen for years. We need to support them. We have private businesses that are looking at trying to figure out better ways to produce hydrogen. So as an example, right now, if you own a hydrogen powered car and we had the stations for it, you could drive in, you could fill up, and you'd be gone in 5 minutes. Not 15 to 20, not 3 or 4 hours, 5 minutes. It's very similar to just how you fill up your gas powered car. The price of these hydrogen cars, fuel cell cars, are coming down. I would tell you that if you talk to PACCAR, who makes Kenworth trucks, they will tell you hydrogen is the answer to our semi-trucks and the fuel that they need. It gets away from the totally added weight of the batteries that a all-electric semi would run. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why we should be promoting hydrogen, trying to research hydrogen, and being able to get the cost down to a level where it's competitive with some of the other alternatives that are out there. We're going to get there. I firmly believe we do, and the sooner the better, so we don't waste millions and millions of dollars installing charging stations when I think hydrogen is a better answer.
Well, I think most people that have done any digging into hydrogen see that as a more viable alternative than vehicles that have batteries that can't be recycled, that if you bury them, contaminate the ground. They contaminate the ground digging lithium ion out that you need in order to create those batteries. So
right.
the footprint for hydrogen is significantly less than it is for electric vehicles. And if we truly are concerned about our environment, supposedly, this would seem to be a much safer and more economic way to go.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. There was an article that came out, my wife told me about, that was on one of the TV stations that showed how they were mining cobalt in some nation, which is where most of the cobalt comes from, or it comes from China, one or the other, which is just as bad. But it was child labor that was digging up the cobalt.
Yep.
And mining the cobalt. And it's like, you know, what are we doing? We got bills that want to go after child, child labor, that says If you are a service company or a retail company, you got to show that the companies you deal with are not using child labor or that type of thing. How you can do that? But let's go look at where we get the cobalt and how that's done. If you want to do all these things, you got to be fair as you apply it to every industry.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th District in Yakima here on The Bottom Line. Senator King, another bill that you have sponsored, Senate Bill 5532. One of the things that we know during COVID, certainly healthcare systems were stretched, they were taxed, hospitals were taxed, but maybe none more so than rural hospitals, where when they had to stop doing certain procedures, it was a significant impact to their communities because in many cases they are the only outlet in those rural communities for healthcare. You've got a bill, hopefully, that will move forward that would provide enhanced payments to low-volume rural hospitals.
Well, and your example is exactly right. The hospital that we patterned this after is Toppenish Hospital, which has been there for decades. It is an especially important to the city of Toppenish, but it's also important to the Yakima tribe. They just closed their birthing center. They announced that, I think, in December of last year. And they're struggling just to keep their doors open. So the bill just says that they're going to get paid for their costs rather than Medicaid. Medicaid is paying like 21% of the cost of what these hospitals have to deal with. You can't sustain that. This hospital is a small hospital, but I can guarantee you it is vital to that valley. It's vital to the tribes. They work very well with the tribes and providing the health care that their tribal members need in a way that is congruent with their religious beliefs and all of those things. And so we're working diligently to try and get this bill through. It was heard today. I testified for it, and I'm hoping that it's going to be exact next week, and we can move it on to the floor and move it over to the House. But that's what the bill does. It's mainly trying to save the Toppenish Hospital.
So, Senator King, you mentioned they closed their birthing center in December of last year. So what option does that leave the residents that would have gone there?
Well, the options are, I believe, they have to go to Memorial Hospital. I'm not sure whether Sunnyside has a birthing unit, but those are your two choices. My guess is most people would go to Memorial, which is, 25, 30 miles away. It's just not as convenient, to say the least, particularly when you're in
labor,
having a baby. You got to be closer than that.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th District in Yakima here on The Bottom Line. Senator, let's talk about the bill that passed through the Senate that is going to remove advisory votes from the ballot. Now, look, we know advisory votes are non-binding. We know that I can't recall a single time an advisory vote was accepted by the legislature. But nonetheless, this was an initiative that was passed by the people. So this is a move by the majority party to once again tell the people in the state of Washington, we don't care what you think.
Well, I think you will find that most of us voted no on that bill yesterday as it came off the floor. But you're right. It is what the people asked for. It's what they voted for. And I would tell you, it is. We've never gone back and changed anything that I'm aware of based upon these advisory votes. But I would tell you that at least half of the phone calls in an election year are about those advisory votes. People will call me and say, "Hey, I see you voted for this. Why did you vote for this tax? Or why did you vote against it?" I mean, it gives us an opportunity to deal with and talk with our constituents, something that doesn't happen all the time. I think it's a way for them to reach out. And I would tell you that most of the time when you explain what and why, what the tax was for, or what it was about, and if you supported it, why, they understand. So I think it's important from that standpoint. But it is. It's what the people asked for. The speech that was given by the sponsoring member was just over the top in regards to pollution. I forget all of the terminology that was used, but it was very disheartening. We'll see what happens over in the House, and they have to face the issue as well. And we'll see where it goes. I can guarantee you, if it gets to the governor's office, he won't veto it. So,
one of the more disappointing moments so far in the legislature, it seemed that the House may have been ready to do it. Now it seems like they're not going to do it. But from the beginning, the attempt to revise police pursuit laws, roll them back to where they were before 2021, bipartisan bills, I believe the House bill had 40 signed on to it. The Senate bill had a number signed on to it as well. Bipartisan support to give police a little bit, give them some of the tools back that were taken in 2021. Senator Dinger announced at the beginning there's no way it's getting through her committee, cited a study with flawed data to back up her point. The study was then taken down and changed. The data still really doesn't show anything of significance, and it doesn't really back any kind of a point as to why we wouldn't look at bringing pursuits back and giving them back to police. What are your thoughts on just the outright refusal of even having the bill go through committee? Was there a belief that if it got to the floor, it would be passed, and then the governor would have to make a decision on whether to sign it or veto it? Or is this something that there are lawmakers in the majority party signing on, knowing it's not going to get out of committee, and then being able to go back and tell their constituents, well, see, I supported it, but there were more Democrats that didn't want it?
I can't. That part of the equation I can't answer. I don't want to accuse any of my fellow senators of what their thoughts were, because I don't know what they were. But I would tell you that the good chair has said she's not going to hear the bill, that there's no reason to hear the bill, and yet we've been given data by other sources that show an absolute reason why we need to back off these pursuits. There's a reason why all of the crime is up to where it is. It's because our police are handcuffed. We had a guy that robbed a bank, and the police went after him. They didn't see him. They you know, under the law, they weren't supposed to be going after him, but they knew the car he was driving, and they saw him, and they were going after him. He called the police department and said, "These people are breaking the law. They can't follow me. The law says they can't follow me. They're breaking the law. So you don't think these people know what the law is? We're letting people get away with robbing banks, with murder. And our police can't go after them. And you know, you think about an individual that just shot somebody and is running away. The police didn't see him shoot him, but they've been given a description. They see that somebody of that description going around the corner, and you can't go after him.
One of the other,
you got a killer in the public, and you want to tell me the public is safer because of this law? It needs to be changed. And I would tell you that if it did get out of the committee, and that's the reason why it's not, is because when it got to the Senate floor, it would pass, and it would pass with a good bipartisan vote.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th District in Yakima here on The Bottom Line. Last one I want to ask you about, Senator King, is probably the most ridiculous piece of legislation I think I have seen in my 20-plus years living in Washington State, and that is to compel people to vote. Even though they compel them to vote, they don't have to fill out the ballot. They just have to send it back so it can be blank. And there's no penalty if you don't vote. But we're going to put this bill forward and take the time and effort to talk about it, send it through committee, vote on it on the floor, send it to the other chamber, send it to the governor, who will probably sign it, only to violate the First Amendment of the Constitution and then have another lawsuit filed against the state.
Yeah. Now, this is a new one to me. I have not heard of this bill.
Senator Hunt's bill.
Yeah, well, I mean, that tells you enough right there. I mean, these are the kinds of things that the good senator, and I consider him my friend, but I tell you what, it's amazing the things that they come up with. It truly is. I have not heard about this bill, but anymore, I'm with you. Nothing surprises me. It's just utterly amazing where some of these bills want to take us.
Senator King, is there going to be any action in the legislature regarding the bans on natural gas, or is that a fight that's not going to be won?
Well, I think at this point it's not going to be won, but we have not given up the battle. I worked the interim on what we called Power Washington. It's a plan that says this is the alternative to what is being proposed. Because all we have from the other side of the aisle and the governor are mandates and sound bites. You know, we're going to be all electric by 2035. We're going to have carbon neutral by 2050. Now they want to be all electric by 2030. It's a goal. I mean, but there's no plan to get there. These are just statements that are made, and now we're going to spend millions of dollars and do these things, but nobody knows why. And again, what are we going to do if by 2030 we're all electric? There's 8 million vehicles in this state. If 6 million of them are electric vehicles, cars, what are we going to do with 6 million batteries when those batteries have seen their life cycle go? We're already working on them. What are we going to do with the hundreds of thousands of wind blades that have a life cycle of 20 to 25 years and we have to replace them? What are we going to do with thousands and thousands of solar panels that have a life cycle? They haven't talked about any of that. In our Power Washington plan, we talk about hydrogen. We talk about adding more dams, adding generators to canals where the flow could generate electricity. We talk about sequestration and making our forests working for us. We talk about supporting all kinds of hybrids, not just the one that they choose. We cover a variety of things, including maintaining our natural gas as an alternative so that we can take care of the peaks and valleys when you're trying to live off of solar and wind and all of those things. The plan that is out there now by the other side of the aisle is going, I can guarantee you, we will have brownouts and blackouts because we can't meet the demand. I mean, I was told if you were a trucking company, and you wanted to buy 10 all-electric trucks, and after you got them, you wanted to charge them all one night, you would need an electrical substation on your property in order to charge them all in one night. I mean, that's where we're going. Nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about all of the problems that are going to be generated by all-electric cars. And it just goes on. So we tried to put forth a plan and say, here's an alternative. Let's talk about it, and we're getting fairly good reception. The hydrogen bill is one of those, and I'm hoping we see that go to the governor's desk for his signature.
Senator Curtis King from the 14th District in Yakima, appreciate your time this afternoon, sir. Thank you very much for joining us, and looking forward to talking with you again soon.
I look forward to it as well, and thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Always, sir. Senator Curtis King, representing 14th. In Yakima.